The stethoscope is cold against my neck. It is a heavy silver weight. I adjust the silk of my sari where it bunches under my white coat. The fabric is a deep saffron. It is the only part of me that feels warm in this corridor. The air in the Royal Victoria is filtered and thin. It smells of industrial bleach and floor wax. I am moving fast. My sneakers squeak on the linoleum. I have 6 minutes before my next consultation. I have 3 patients waiting in the hall. The 2026 systemic bias report is sitting on the nurse's station. It is a thick stack of paper with a government seal. Everyone is talking about it. They call it a landmark study. I call it my daily life. I pick up a chart. Mrs. Kapadia. Room 4. She is 62 years old. She has been coming here for 3 months. Chronic joint pain, fatigue, high glucose readings. The previous notes say she is non-compliant. They say she has a cultural barrier to diet modification. I push the door open. Mrs. Kapadia is sitting on the edge of the bed. She looks small. Her hands are folded in her lap. She is wearing a floral salwar kameez. It is faded from too many washes. She looks up at me and her eyes brighten. She sees the saffron silk at my collar. She sees a face that looks like her daughter's. She starts to speak in Gujarati. Her voice is a whisper. She tells me her legs feel like they are filled with broken glass. She tells me she tried the diet the other doctor gave her. She stopped eating rice. She stopped eating rotis. She is starving. But the pain is getting worse. I look at her chart again. No referral for the low-calorie diet program. No specialist consult for her neuropathy. Just a note to monitor and advise. I feel a heat rising in my chest. It is not anger yet. It is a clinical frustration. I check her vitals. Her blood pressure is climbing. I look at her feet. They are swollen. The skin is tight and shiny. This is not a cultural barrier. This is a clinical failure. I tell her I am going to fix this. I tell her in her own language. Her shoulders drop 2 inches. She trusts me. I walk out to the station. I find Dr. Harrison. He is the senior registrar. He is leaning against the desk with a coffee. He is looking at his watch. I hold up the chart. I ask him why Mrs. Kapadia hasn't been referred to the LCD program. He doesn't look at the chart. He looks at me. He says we have a quota for that program. He says the resources are stretched. He says those patients rarely stick to the liquid phase. He says it is a waste of a slot. He uses the word lifestyle like it is a moral failing. I feel the shift then. The air in the hallway gets colder. I tell him the data is clear. I tell him the 2026 report specifically mentions this bias. I tell him her glucose is at a dangerous level. He puts his coffee down. He doesn't smile anymore. He tells me I am being too emotional. He tells me I am identifying too closely with the patient. He tells me to go back to my rounds. He calls me Layla instead of Dr. Khan. It is a dismissal. It is a closing of the gates. I do not go back to my rounds. I go to the computer terminal. I enter the referral myself. I flag it as urgent. I bypass the registrar's approval. I know the protocol. I know the risks. But I see Mrs. Kapadia's face. I see the broken glass in her legs. I hit the send button. The cursor blinks. The data is gone into the system. It feels like a small victory. It feels like I have finally done my job. The next morning, the atmosphere is different. The nurses won't look at me. The ward clerk stops talking when I walk by. I get an email at 9 a.m. It is from the clinical director. It is an invitation to an informal chat. The subject line is professional conduct and resource management. My heart hammers against my ribs. I can feel the sari fabric itching against my skin. It feels like a target now. I walk into the director's office. Dr. Sterling is sitting behind a glass desk. Harrison is there too. He is standing by the window. He looks bored. Sterling tells me to sit down. He says he is concerned. He says I broke the chain of command. He says I misappropriated a high-cost resource for a patient who does not meet the optimal success criteria. I ask him what that means. I ask him if optimal means white and middle class. The room goes silent. I can hear the clock ticking on the wall. Sterling leans forward. He tells me that is a very serious accusation. He says he is disappointed. He says he thought I was a team player. He mentions my upcoming consultant application. He says a record of insubordination would be a shame. It is a threat. It is clear and sharp. He wants me to retract the referral. He wants me to admit I made a clinical error. I look at Harrison. He is looking at his cuticles. I look back at Sterling. I think about the medical school oath. I think about my father's pharmacy in Birmingham. I think about the thousands of women like Mrs. Kapadia who walk into these white halls and feel invisible. I tell him I will not retract it. I tell him the referral stands on clinical merit. I tell him if he wants it removed, he has to sign his own name to the denial. Sterling's face turns a dull red. He tells me I am excused. He says the trust will be launching a formal performance review. He says my clinical judgment is being called into question. I walk out of the office. My hands are shaking. I go to the bathroom and splash cold water on my face. I look in the mirror. I look tired. I look like a woman who is about to lose everything she worked for. The next 2 weeks are a slow erasure. I am removed from the surgical rotation. I am assigned to administrative duties. I spend my days filling out spreadsheets in a windowless room. I am not allowed to see patients. No one eats lunch with me. I am a ghost in a saffron saree. I hear whispers in the break room. They say I've gone radical. They say I'm playing the race card because I can't handle the pressure. I find out through a friend that Mrs. Kapadia got into the program. She started the liquid phase. Her glucose has dropped. She is walking again. She sent a card to the ward. The nurses didn't give it to me. I found it in the recycling bin. It had a picture of a bird on it. Inside, she wrote, "Thank you for seeing me," in shaky English. I take the card home. I put it on my mantelpiece. It is the most expensive piece of paper I own. The performance review is a farce. They bring up old cases. They find minor charting errors from 3 years ago. They frame my advocacy as cultural bias. They say I am unable to remain objective. They offer me a deal. I can resign quietly. I can move to a different trust with a neutral reference. Or they can proceed with the hearing. They tell me a hearing will be public. They tell me it will ruin my reputation. I sit in my apartment that night. The lights of the city are blurred by the rain on the window. I realize the system isn't broken. It is working exactly as intended. It is designed to protect itself. It is designed to filter out anyone who makes too much noise. If I stay and fight, they will crush me. They have more money. They have more lawyers. They have the institutional weight of a century. I write my resignation letter. I make it short. I do not apologize. I state that my departure is a direct result of the systemic biases documented in the 2026 report. I name Sterling. I name Harrison. I send it to the board, the union, and the local press. I know it will not change the hospital overnight. I know Sterling will stay in his office. I know Harrison will get his promotion. I go back to the hospital one last time to clear my locker. It is late. The night shift is coming on. The corridors are quiet. I see a young Asian med student standing at the nurse's station. She looks overwhelmed. She is wearing a stethoscope around her neck. She looks at me. She looks at my saree. She looks at the way I hold my head. I walk up to her. I don't know her name. I don't need to. I hand her my copy of the systemic bias report. I have highlighted the sections on patient advocacy. I have written my phone number on the back. I tell her to keep her eyes open. I tell her that the patients will tell her the truth, even when the charts lie. She takes the papers. She looks confused, but she nods. I walk toward the exit. The automatic doors slide open. The cold night air hits me. It feels like a shock. It feels like a clean break. I am 34 years old. I am a doctor without a hospital. I have a mortgage and a car loan and a black mark on my record. My career in the NHS is effectively over. The doors hiss shut behind me. I walk to my car. The pavement is wet. The orange streetlights reflect in the puddles. I think about Mrs. Kapadia. I think about her walking on legs that don't feel like broken glass anymore. I think about the cost of that one referral. It was my career. It was my security. It was my future. I get into the car and start the engine. I look at myself in the rearview mirror. I straighten the saffron silk. I am not a doctor in room 4 anymore. I am something else. I am a woman who refused to be a silent part of the machinery. The silence is gone. The consequence is permanent. I put the car in gear and drive away from the white lights of the Royal Victoria. I do not look back. I am moving forward into the dark, and for the first time in years, I can breathe.